Technorama episode 641, chemists have all the solutions. Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, welcome to the show. Woohoo! If you're returning, welcome back. Woohoo! I have the same amount of enthusiasm for new people as I do for returning people. It's just that much fun. I'm Chuck.
Woohoo!
Craig's here. Woohoo!
Yay!
I'm Chuck Tomasi, and with me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I am doing great.
Appropriate response is woohoo!
Yes, right. Hey, I did get, before we get started, I'll tell you, we went to pick up our son from school.
He's getting a little heavy to pick him up. You know, after about the age of four, I say walk.
Well, he is taller than I am, so it's kind of hard to lift him up. Anyway, he's going to SCAD in Atlanta, and they have a fashion, whole fashion thing. And all year, I've been asking him if he's gone to see this this exhibit that they have in the SCAD Fash, which is the fashion museum area.
Yes.
And this one, it had, it was for costumes from, famous movies, all like Roots, Coming to America. I'm Gonna Get You Sucker, a bunch of movies like that. And they had, Black Panther stuff, you know, for all the costumes there.
Yes.
And there, of course, right in the middle is the Black Panther costume. And I took some pictures of it. It's pretty cool. And all those costumes, you look at it and you're like, wow, those are, you know, really well done. But you start thinking, that's some heavy material. That's a lot of material. You know, that's getting, like, it's got to be hot. You know, well, even for cosplay in Atlanta, you know.
In the Dragon Con parade, in the heat.
In the heat. I mean, imagine what it's like for all those actors. I got that stuff on. It was, you know, pretty heavy, but it was really cool to see.
Nate. Anyway,
just throwing it out there.
All right. So Black Panther it was for the win.
That's right.
All right. What do you say we get on with the feedback? Where's our feedback music? There it is.
Letters. Oh, we get letters. We get your letters every day.
All right, what kind of feedback we got today?
We have feedback to our question of the week last week, which is what fictional character should have been hit with a huge lawsuit at the end of the story? Nice question, Craig. That was almost too obvious because I think the answer is every superhero.
That's right. Pretty much.
We did have some other answers, though. Why don't you start us off with one of the Technorama answers?
Yeah, John Miller Jr., a staple in their Facebook group. He says, Superman from the movie Man of Steel. Also, if you go back and watch the movie, Metropolis was repaired roughly a day later. It's just amazing. He said, yes, how? I'm just, you know, Superman put it together while you weren't watching.
It could happen.
Yes, right.
It's in the script. They didn't tell you how much time went between the scenes. Sometimes they do that, you know, 10 years later.
Right.
All right. My sister says Yosemite Sam.
Yosemite Sam
should have been hit with a lawsuit.
That's right. I had Brian Parker say Ferris Bueller, along with many felony charges.
That's true. Yes.
Yeah. Well, you can start off with stealing the car.
Steve London says Bilbo Baggins for larceny by finding when he takes possession of the ring, and he finds the ring and the owner is easily identified as Mr. Smeagol. even though Mr. Smeagol stole the ring from Diagol and killing him. As this is not known at the time, the one ring belongs to Smeagol.
Yep, that's right. Also, Gary Lindrow said Clark Griswold for child endangerment, reckless driving, public exposure, animal cruelty times two, the dog and the moose, And then Trampas
Wait, the
Whitman,
moose was just a he just punched the sign. It wasn't a real moose.
Well, he did shoot John Candy.
Property damage, I guess.
Yeah. And Trampas Whitman says, replying to Gary, says, those are criminal charges. Now, wrongful death might be where he gets sued. Grandmother.
Wile E. Coyote is what John Kratzner says. And Acme. Acme for all the faulty products.
Yeah, that company needs to be out of business.
Wile E. Coyote can't be sued because he's a super genius.
Yeah. And Mike Robison says Batman, Harry Dresden.
Yes.
The Tick.
Yes.
The Tick, and possibly Megatron.
Possibly. How do you not get Megatron?
I know. Yeah, that's right. That's pretty good.
Megatron's got a really good lawyer. It's a blender.
It's a blender. That's right.
All righty. That was all our questions for this week. Thank you very much for everybody who participated. We will shoot you another question at the end of the show, and be sure to social media that thing next Saturday so you have time to respond in time for Sunday night's show. So with that, we did not get any email or voicemail. Let's roll on out of here. And roll right into the history. Yes, we got some good ones for you tonight. On this day in history for May 26, 2021, this is the 146th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 219 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 961 that King Otto I elects. Why did I put this in here? I don't know, but I'm going to keep reading it. Elected his six-year-old son, Otto II, as heir apparent and co-ruler of the East Frankish Kingdom. He is crowned at Aachen and placed under the tutelage of his grandmother, Matilda. That has nothing, not very interesting for nerd history, but I must have accidentally clicked a button somewhere.
I know. Yeah, anyway. Also, on May 26, 1869... Boston University was chartered by the Commonwealth of Massachusetts.
Now, that's interesting. You know, colleges, when they get started.
Yeah. That's an official nerdery.
Charles Dow. Now, I thought this was like for Dow Chemicals, but it's not. Mm-hmm. He published the first edition of the Dow Jones Industrial Average on this date in 1896. I did not check what the Industrial Average was, but I suspect it was somewhere around 100.
I was going to say two. No. Also on May 26, 1897, Dracula, a gothic horror novel by Irish author Bram Stoker, was published.
Was it also written in gothic font?
Maybe. Possibly.
94 years ago today, the last Ford Model T rolled off the assembly line after a production run of, get this, 15,007,003 vehicles.
Hey, that's the same amount of Commodores that they sold.
I wonder if that's a record for most automobiles of one model.
I would say the Beetle would probably be up there, but Jeep. I don't know how many they sold, but that, I would imagine that would be a close.
Beetles went through different generations, though. I guess there were different Ford Model Ts, too.
Yeah.
There was like the Roadster and the Sportster, and anyway.
Yeah, we'll look up the Beetle. I got to say that's going to be a close.
Speaking of Beetles,
second.
Read on.
Yeah, so speaking of the Beatles, see, I was trying to transition there. Also, on May 26, 1967, the Beatles, Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band, was released.
I think Clinton does better segues than we do. It was also on this date in 1969 that Apollo 10 returned to the Earth after a successful eight-day test of all the components needed for the forthcoming first manned moon landing. Wouldn't that be disappointing if you were on Apollo 10? Like, I was so close. We went past the moon. We were within 16 kilometers of the surface. We made sure everything worked for Neil and Buzz and Michael. So good luck, guys. But nobody remembers who was on Apollo 10.
I know, right? It will. And it was also on the same date in 1970 that the Soviet Tupolev Tu-144 became the first commercial transport to exceed Mach 2.
Mach 2? Isn't that the road car, the white car for, never mind.
No, that was the Klingon command. Mach 2!
Oh, yeah, okay, there you go. And suddenly his,
I mean, flush
suddenly
the
lights turn on in his living room for Alexa.
I mean, That means flush the toilet and Klingon.
Yeah.
Mach 2.
That's a smart home command.
Yeah.
All you Klingons, your porch lights just turned off. Happy birthday goes out on this date to French English mathematician and theorist Abraham de Moivre, born on this date in 1667.
And born on May 26, 1907, American actor, director, and producer John Wayne. That was my John Wayne impression.
Let me tell you something, cowboy.
Yeah, that's right.
We're not going to have any of that sissy history on this show. I'll tell you what. Peter Cushing, yes, Grand Moff Tarkin, was born today in 1913.
And American actor James Arness was born 98 years ago today.
You know, he's Peter Gray's brother.
Is he?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I learned that as a child.
I didn't realize that.
Yes. Marshall Dillon from Gunsmoke is related to the guy from Mission Impossible.
His name you can't recall after you just said it.
Your mission, should you choose to accept. Dang it, I'm moving on. I got too many things going through my brain right now. Miles Davis, the American trumpeter, player, composer, and band leader, was born on this date in 1926. Help me out in the chat. What was Peter Graves' character name on Mission Impossible? I should know it. It's right there. Anyway.
Graves. That's what you just said.
No, Peter Graves is the actor's name.
Oh.
Mr. Phelps. That's what it was.
Yeah,
the swimming guy.
Oh, okay. Yes, right. American pathologist, author, and assisted suicide activist Jack Kevorkian was born 93 years ago today.
Why are we celebrating Jack Kevorkian's birthday?
I don't know.
American
he's not
singer,
famous for births.
Songwriter Stevie Nicks is 73 today.
Wow, imagine that. And also turning 72 today is American computer programmer who first developed the first wiki, Ward Cunningham.
Wasn't he on, like, My Three Sons' Happy Days? I'm sorry.
Ward!
That's just a cross-reference. Yes. American singer, songwriter, guitarist Hank Williams Jr. is exactly 1 year younger than Stevie Nicks. 72.
That's right. And Sally Ride, American physicist and astronaut, founded Sally Ride Science, was born on the same date in 1951.
Uh-oh.
And Sally Ride.
Uh-oh. We had
all right, that's
one
it.
More
We're
to
cut
go.
Off.
Yeah, time's up. American astronomer and academic Amanda Bauer is 42 today. Listener birthdays today include May 26th, Eli Yukulzon. 27th, Tanya from Dancing with Elephants, formerly from Dancing with Elephants. Chris Martins, host of the Jesus Geek ZNet Central and producer of On the Edge of Darkness. I have no idea if any of those podcasts are still in production, but he's happy birthday to him on the 28th. Petri Lopia on the 30th. 31st is Troy Dunleavy. And June 1st is the birthday of Selgenor. Happy birthday to all of you. And that's the way it was on this day in history for May 26, 2021. If you want to get on the calendar, let me bring that up. We have a birthday link for you at chuckchat.com/wiki or chuckchat.com/birthday. Either one works. Put your birthday in there. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year, as many, many other people have done. Obviously, let's get on with the news with a random button that I can't read with these glasses on.
Good news, everyone.
I had the wrong glasses on anyway. Those aren't even my reading glasses.
I told you.
No, that
you
didn't help.
Two different types of frames.
No, I just forgot to switch.
See? That's what I'm telling you. You've been able to go, oh.
What?
That's not the right.
That wouldn't have helped because I'd still be looking through the lenses, not at the frames.
See, mine are.
Move
totally
on. You want to read different. It or am I?
See, look. Wait a minute.
That's where I need that sound clip from Monty Python and Holy Grail. Get on with it.
And now for something completely different. All right. So you want me to take the first one?
Yes, sir.
So there's a handwritten letter by Albert Einstein with the famous E equals MC squared equation, and it gets $1.2 million at an auction.
That's the second story. So I'll take the first one since
you're into that one. I just rearranged the tabs anyway. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
That's all right.
So a letter handwritten by Albert Einstein in which he writes out the famous E equals MC squared was sold at auction for more than $1.2 million on Friday, about three times more than it was expected to get. Somebody's happy. Boston-based RR Auction said. The activists at the Einstein Papers Project at California Institute of Technology and the Hebrew University of Jerusalem say they are the only three other known examples of Einstein writing the world-changing equation in his own hand. The fourth example, the only one in a private collection, only became public recently, according to RR Auction, which had expected to sell for about $400,000. The important letter from both a holographic and physics point of view, Bobby Livingston, executive vice president of RR Auction, said, calling the equation the most famous in the world. The equation, energy equals mass times the speed of light squared, changed physics by demonstrating that time was not absolute and that mass and energy were equivalent. So the one-page handwritten letter in German to Polish-American physicist Ludwig Silberstein is dated October 26, 1946. I was hoping they put a picture in here. Silberstein was well-known critic and challenger to some of Einstein's theories. I guess he was rubbing it in his face. Look! It says, your equation can be answered from the E equals MC squared 2 formula without any iteration. Einstein wrote in a letter written to Princeton University on Princeton University letterhead, according to a translation provided by RR Auction. The letter was part of Silberstein's personal archives, which were sold by his descendants. The buyer was identified only by RR as an anonymous document collector. The rarity of the letter set off a bidding war, Livingston said. Five parties were bidding aggressively at first, but once the price reached about $700,000, it became a two-party contest, he said. I guess that would weed out the riffraff, right?
A two-person horse race. Wow. $1.2 million for E equals MC squared.
That's right.
As long as it's authenticated, now you can just get an NFT.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, we've got another story.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is. I don't know that I would pay that much. I would call that the, like they said, the most famous equation, except for 42. Oh, wait, that's the answer. That's not the actual equation.
That's the answer, yeah. We're still waiting for that question.
I'm in the middle of watching the original 1981 version of that because it popped up on Hulu.
Oh, it's cheesy, but I love it.
It doesn't hold up. You're right. It's cheesy beyond all. Donna said, I am not watching that.
Well, the thing about it for me is I saw it when it first came on. You may have. And it just caught my attention at that moment, and it was perfect at that moment. Now I look at it, you know, nostalgically or however you want to say it.
Yeah,
I love it.
It does give some flashbacks to that era. Like, okay, mm-hmm. I can see, you know, watching this in 1981, this would have been pretty cool. There were a couple of good lines in there. I don't remember if they made it into future situations, but when Ford Prefect and Arthur Dent are in the airlock of the Vogon ship and they're about to get ejected into space, Arthur says something like along the lines of, it's times like this when I'm locked in a Vogon airlock and about to be ejected into space with a man from a small planet near Betelgeuse 5 that I would remember what my mother used to say. And Ford says, really? What's that? He says, I don't remember. I wasn't listening.
Yeah, that's pretty good. There's some good stuff in there. And it does change a little bit from iteration. I enjoy the old one. I've watched it a couple times throughout the years, but you're right. In a lot of ways, it doesn't hold up, but
the sound effects are just over the top. Like every container they're opening, bling, bling, bling. Like, really? And you could hear Marvin. Like
whenever they go to read the book or something, you're.
Yeah. Marvin needs a tune up.
Hey, you know, in the movie, that Marvin did show up in the movie. He was waiting in line for the paperwork.
Oh,
you have to go look. You can find a screenshot.
The newer one with Zoe Deschanel and, you know, the mm-hmm. Marvin with the big head. Looks like he's about to tip over. He just looks more depressed than the old one.
Hey, quick tip.
Yes.
they're supposed to be developing, not Tip. They're developing Hitchhiker's Guide for Hulu. So
they're making it again.
Yeah. Why not?
Is it really necessary?
Yes.
No.
It's a story that must be told over
again
and over
and again and right. again.
But yeah, they're doing an iteration of it. And I was really hoping that they would have a sequel to that movie, but that just never happened. So
I guess I'll go read the next story.
It's like reading a pamphlet.
Don't talk to me about life.
All right, next of a planet.
This is what I have to do, and all I get is to run a podcast. How shape-shifting magnets could help build lower emission computers. The device you're using to read this article most certainly operates by placing its zeros and ones in bits of semiconductor, namely silicon, which constantly needs electricity to function. Duh.
Right.
In a world that's pushing for net zero carbon emissions, that sort of energy use won't do. Luckily, researchers are working on fundamentally changing how computers work, which could lead to powerful, low-energy devices. One way of doing that is to build a computer with magnets. Researchers at the University of Michigan, collaborating with chipmaker Intel, have created a new iron alloy that could be a major feature of magnet-based computers of tomorrow. Computers of tomorrow!
Yes.
Their work was published recently in Nature Communications. Their alloy acts as a magnostrictor. That means it relies on the fact that when you plunge a magnetic material, such as iron, within a magnetic field, that material subtly shape shifts. Like Odo?
That's right.
By turns adding other shape of a bucket of water. By adding other metals, and alloy is a mixture of metallic elements, by the way, and fine-tuning their proportions, you can make alloys that are more magnostrictive or more flexible when their magnetic field changes. Today, magnostrictors help us build high-quality sensors. Since we can detect the changes of good magnostrictor shape in the presence of magnetic fields, even rather weak ones, by using electrical current to create magnetic fields, you can force a magnostrictor to shapeshift. In this way, you can convert the electrical energy of the current relatively easily into the mechanical energy of a magnostrictor changing shape. This is kind of creepy sounding. So, more article about that and how we can get there on our show notes. Go to chuckchat.com, episode 641. I got a bell around here somewhere. There we are. There. Yeah. Three bells. It's that good.
So. Yeah, this story will attract you.
Jim Phelps. That's what John Miller Jr. said. Jim Phelps.
Oh, Jim Phelps. There you go. Yeah.
Not Michael Phelps. That was his dad.
Referring to
James Arness and Mission Impossible. And
Peter. Because that was like 20 minutes ago when we talked about it. Just making sure.
Podcasting is time shifted. He's just playing along. All right. Do we have a Hex and Strange Stories? We do have a Hex and Strange Stories.
Yeah, we do.
Let's play the Hex and Strange Stories tone. That sounded like the computer that was on the old version of Hitchhikers. Every time it talked, it had to make lots of noise. And it was just covered with streamers of paper. Like,
you know,
what?
It's like they walked around in the props department and says, yeah, give me that. Give me that. Give me that.
But yeah, and you know, that second head on Zaphod was just like,
oh, it's comical.
It looked like it was comatose is what it was.
Considering when they made it, it's not too bad, but you know what it reminds me of is Escape from Alcatraz. You know, when they did with Clint Eastwood and they made the little heads and they put them in. That's what it looked like.
It's actually what the real heads look like. Cause I was at Alcatraz and saw those. Yeah. And hey guys, this is really spectacular. I'm like, oh, Zaphod's been hitting the weed
there's
again.
There's only like 8 episodes. Come on, Donna couldn't suffer through that. 6.
No, she's not watching any of them.
There's only 6.
I'm watching them on my iPad with headphones on. Anyway, on to the Hacks and Strange Stories. You're up.
All right. All right. So I think we've talked about this before, and but this is Mark Rober, excuse me, getting confused with our listener. He built another maze for squirrels to kind of test their intelligence. He did this before last year, and this is version 2.0.
Okay.
So one of the most popular YouTube videos of 2020 was former NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory engineer Mark Rober, who attempted to build a squirrel-proof obstacle course. Spoiler alert, it wasn't. So a year later, he's trying again. And this time, he's taking inspiration from movies like Mission Impossible and Ocean's 11 with laser rooms, trapdoors, and roof mazes.
You think we had some connections between this show, like we read ahead, but we didn't. The mention of Mission Impossible.
Oh, that's true. I didn't even think about that. So last year's experiment was inspired by Rover's effort to pursue bird watching as a way to endure long hours spent at home during the pandemic lockdowns. But he soon discovered that no matter how complicated the bird feeder was that he installed, the squirrel population had no problem circumventing their proposed squirrel-proof countermeasures.
Mm-hmm.
And with a history of tackling problems like porch pirates using extreme engineering, which he's done that a video on that before, which that was a lot of fun. Rober figured his background in designing components for Mars rovers would be more than enough to design obstacles to prevent the squirrels from stealing his nuts, his walnuts. Anyway, so Rober, previous squirrel obstacle course, took inspiration from TV shows like American Ninja Warrior. But this time he turned some of the famous capers in Hollywood has ever brought to screen. Not only would squirrels have to navigate long course and restart from the beginning every time they failed, but they also had to face obstacles like rooms filled with simulated laser tripwires, which looks really cute. And I think you can see it on the thumbnail for the video, or there's an animated GIF on here. Not only would the squirrels have to navigate long course and restart from the beginning every time they failed, a helicopter that travels down a zip line, a rooftop maze designed to emulate the building's ventilation system, and even a room with a high ceiling that can only be escaped with using a ladder that lowers when entering a one-button password on the computer in the other room, which the squirrel did, and the ladder came down. So anyway, go watch this video if you haven't already. It is fun to watch and see their process of building it, as well as seeing the squirrels navigate it. And there's one squirrel, it was a black squirrel. That thing was smart because it was flipping up. It would know how to go through the maze once again if it had to get out, if it got ejected or something. Just come back. Anyway, it's really cool.
Getting a little frightened of this. The squirrels are getting smarter.
Yeah. Well, actually, if he's building this and they're getting through it, then they get smarter each time. So
yes.
Squirrel Maze 3.0, they'll become sentient or self-aware.
They'll be making mazes for us.
Who says they haven't?
Mm-hmm.
But it's really cool. And if you haven't seen it, Chuck, this is definitely something you need to watch.
All this time, we've been worried about the singularity when computers get consciousness. Watch out for the squirrels.
Those things are crazy smart, though.
All right, shout out to the chat room. We've got, we mentioned John Miller Jr. earlier and Megan Enlow. There's a few other people have been watching. Thank you very much for that. Right. We had a few on YouTube, but nobody's chimed in, so we really don't know who's out there. But thank you anyway for joining us. We're here on Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time for you, or shortly thereafter once we get all the details of streaming and whatnot squared away. Join us. Go to our Facebook page and subscribe. Turn on those notifications. Do whatever you got to do on YouTube for Technorama Podcast, and we will be here for you. It's a lot more fun in person. Trust us.
That's right.
We're up to Remember When already?
Yeah.
Yikes. All right.
We need to talk slower.
Nah. We'll be fine. Forest Ranger stumbles into Garden of Ancient Beasts in California foothills. Sweet. A park ranger wandering through a petrified forest in California has unearthed a trove of prehistoric fossils. Is that a bit redundant? You can't have trove futuristic
prehistoric fossil.
You can't have futuristic fossils.
Current fossils? I don't know.
Including a stunningly preserved mastodon skull and the remains of a 400-pound or 181-kilogram monster salmon. Ooh, imagine what that would go for today.
I want to eat it.
Mm-hmm. Put it in sushi.
Yeah.
Had sushi tonight. It was good.
400 pounds of sushi.
Paleontologists unearthed dozens of fossil species near the Mokelumne River. Hope I'm pronouncing that somewhat correct. Watershed in the foothills of the Sierra Mountains southeast of Sacramento. The fossil site, which dates back roughly 10 million years to the Miocene epoch, is one of the most significant such troves ever discovered in the Golden State. Quote, few other fossils discoveries like this exist in California. Russell Shapiro, a professor of paleontology and stratigraphy at California State University Chico, told Chico State Today. So, lots of cool stuff. The site was discovered quite by accident. Greg Franchek, a ranger naturalist with the East Bay Municipality Utility District, or EBMUD, which provides drinking water, maybe muddy drinking water, for the area, was ambling near the watershed when he noticed something that looked like wood, but it was smooth like stone. According to the statement from EBMUD, I happened upon a petrified tree, Franchek said in a voice recording, including with a statement. This tree was partially encased in a burial, in the burial sediments. And because one end was exposed, I could actually see the tree rings inside. He looked around and discovered a second and a third and so on. It suddenly dawned on him that he was walking in a petrified forest. Franchek returned over the next few weeks, conduct more organized survey, and that's when he found vertebrate fossils. So he reached out to the paleontologist and geologist, including Shapiro. Well, Shapiro didn't expect to find much, but he was soon surprised. His team began excavating and found the tip of a pearly bone. And as they had etched away at the surrounding rock, a pair of tusks, teeth, and a skull began to emerge. It was a mastodon, I tell you, astonishingly preserved.
Woo!
That's how it was written in the Chico State Today. But I'm putting a little more enthusiasm on it.
No, this is exactly how they delivered the news in the press conference.
What you hope to find is a tip of a tusk, Shapiro told CSU Today. Not only do we have the tip, but we have the entire thing. It's just beautiful ivory. It's mind-blowing.
Yeah.
Okay. Nobody reads it's stories quite like
emoji.
That. Yeah, nobody reads them like that anymore. Over the past year, Shapiro and his colleagues have uncovered hundreds of animal specimens constituting dozens of species, all within a forest of 600 petrified trees. Among the ancient species the team uncovered were the giant fish, which was an ancestor of a modern-day salmon, an extinct camel the size of a giraffe, and a mastodon, and... Oh my, the gomphotheer, which is an ancestor.
And smosberries that taste like smosberries.
Well, the gomphotheer is an ancestor to the elephants. The team has also found the remains of rhinos, giant tortoises, horses, and tapirs. Wow. The bones of these primeval creatures were likely carried to the region by floods and debris flows from volcanoes farther inland, Chico State Today reported. At the time, these long-lost creatures lived in a region where there would have been an oak forest fringed by an ancient ocean, according to the Chico State Today. Wow, they like to say that a lot, don't they?
Yeah.
For now, the research team is keeping the location of the fossil dig a secret. But those who want to see the mastodon will be able to view it at the university's Gateway Science Museum in late fall. Wow, this lady on the video is almost as animated as I am.
I know. She's excited. That's pretty cool, though, to come up across that.
And then,
it's a big find.
Yes.
But I like how they started describing everything. You know, the camel the size of a giraffe. The mastodon and the gunk, you know.
Yes.
Keep on.
I would love to find fossil find like that, or at least be part of that and go, Look at all this stuff just strewn about.
Well, to the untrained eye, to be honest with you, looking at some of the things that he's, this one guy's brushing, you know, to get, you know, it's like I probably would have just walked over it, you know, kept walking or stepped on it. And, you know, I would have not just known that that was something important. Would you?
If it were different than all the other rocks around, and if you've seen a petrified tree, yes, they do look different than the rocks.
I mean, you know, some, if it's buried a little bit, I mean, I wouldn't have known. So
you gotta stop and look at the rocks, Craig. That's all there is to it.
Smell the rocks.
Speaking of smelling the rocks, let's thank our patrons. Not one of our better segues.
Okay. Clinton's getting in here again.
Thank you again to all of our patrons who, for as little as a dollar a show, they get their names read out on each episode, and they also get bonus content because they are generous enough to contribute to the show to keep it going, pay for bandwidth and hosting and software upgrades, all that good stuff that it takes to keep this podcast running. And it seems like every year it takes just a little bit more, doesn't it?
Yeah.
All right, let's read out the names.
One of my by the way, we got to pay for gas now. So
There's no beer, no gas. This doesn't go to our personal funds.
Okay. We're not. Oh, that's right. That's the official word. I got it.
Alexis Duran, Ember Elstad, Amy Bowen. Thank you very much, Abner Braverman. Thank you, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Man Coyer, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis. Thank you, Gary Lindros and Harold McKinstry. Thank you, John Clifford, John Noble, Jorga Schrauen, Christina. I should try reading this all in one breath one time. See if it works.
Yeah, I was just thinking the same thing.
Let's see if we can just finish this last part with one breath. Thank you, Kyle Nishioka, Leon, Mark Kilfoyle, Mike Wills, Chris Martinez, Saturday Morning Media, Stephen Weshy, Steve Therian. Thank you, Steve Cody, and Sweet Steve from Sweden. Thank you, everybody, for being our patrons. You, too, can be a patron. Oh, I still got the birthday calendar thing up there. Let's clear that. Put calendar... birthday. No, not birthday. Not live. Patreon. There we go. Patreon.com/Technorama podcast. I think it's time for some new titles.
Yeah.
Thank you. You can go. If you feel that this show is somewhat entertaining or at least worth your time, you've been listening for the last 15 years and go, hey. Yes.
Or if you want to pay us to shut up, we can make a tier for that.
How would that work? They'd be competing. If the people that make a, if the people who want us to shut up pay more,
$1 million will shut up.
But if you stop, then they don't have to pay. Nobody has to pay. It doesn't work, Craig.
It's a one-time payment.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
Oh, the Patreon golf rules. Okay, I got it.
Patreon.com/Technorama podcast. All right, let's bring that down. Don't bring me down, Bruce. And we go right into the remote. Bum. Okay, we got a couple of shows. Craig got one, I've got one. Go ahead.
Yeah. So this is a movie that just came out on Netflix. I know a lot of people have seen it already, but it's Army of the Dead. It's a Zack Snyder zombie film. That again just came out, had Dave Bautista and trying to think who all else was in it, but it was a really good film. As far as zombie films go, it was a little long. It was like 2.5 hours, but didn't feel like 2.5 hours, so that wasn't really that much of an issue. Now I like the way they set up the zombies. I'm not going to give it away too much, but some of them have some intelligence. And then there's different types, and you kind of get to see the different types and how they affect the story and whatnot. So it's really cool. Harrison and I both watched it and we enjoyed it. So yeah, it was a fun film.
And where can you find this? Netflix?
Yeah, on Netflix. And I think in the theater. What would you rate it?
0 to 10.
0 to 10. I'll give it a solid 8. I enjoyed it. Yeah, so solid 8.
All right. And I've got one on Hulu called Dinosaur 13. I believe this was on Netflix a few years ago. It's a documentary that was made around 2014 about some scientists that discovered Sue, the famous T-Rex.
Right.
And all the litigation and lawsuits and government BS that came in. I'm not going to spoil it for you, but these scientists back in 1991 were out exploring in Wyoming, and they found what turned out to be the most intact T-Rex ever found, still. And they were just starting to get into the cleaning up, and the government swooped in and said, nope, that's ours, because you are on government land, and this is illegal search, or illegally gotten, and they went to court for a whole bunch of other things. One guy even spent some time in prison for some of the surrounding activities, not even related to the Sioux case, but it does have a good home at this point, but it was not where they wanted it.
It wasn't a good road to get there,
nice
right?
Nice little town. It really kind of dampened everybody's spirits, but the moral of the story is, if you're going into archaeology, paleontology, if you're digging in the dirt, you better know darn well where you're digging, whose land that's it's true. On, do you have rights, or it could be taken away. And it was a lot of work to dig this thing out. The government, when they started seizing this thing, really didn't have a clue as to how to transport it. So one of their guys said, wait, let's make sure this is packed and stored properly, because you clowns are just like, you can't send in the Army Reserve.
Throw it in the back of a pickup.
Yeah, that's pretty much what they wanted to do.
Oh. So,
and it was another, they wanted to make an example of this guy. So they really kind of threw the book at him. But there's some other extenuating factors that were in there for the judge's ruling. I liked it. I know I've seen this before, but it was a good refresher about the case and what happened. I like dinosaurs. I've been interested in dinosaurs since I was a little children. And this one was kind of fun to watch, even though it had a sad outcome for the scientists involved. As documentaries go, I think it was about 2 hours on Hulu. I give this, a 9 for storytelling and completeness of coverage. They had some great old clips from the 90s. It was fun to watch. Whoa, look at the mullets.
Right.
Yeah. The townspeople came out in force, and so were their hairdos.
Right. Hey, by the way, one more thing I want to add about the Army of the Dead.
Yes.
The opening title sequence was actually really good. Actually, I think it's hard to explain. You have to watch it, but I thought that was one of the better title sequences I've seen for opening in a movie.
Okay.
So yeah, keep that in mind.
I will take that into account. See if I can find some time. I have to finish watching our assignment for the topic is Trek. We're watching Star Trek Into Darkness. We got to watch that by Thursday and have some notes ready to go. So
I've seen that movie so many times, but yeah, I can do that.
I still want to, write down some quotes and go, wait, what?
Yeah. Hey, by the way, if you're listening to our show and you don't realize we actually do another podcast, we do The Topic is Trek over at thetopicistrek.com.
Dang. With Clinton Alvord from Comedy Forecast.
With Clinton Alvord. And we talk about Star Wars. No, Star Trek. The Topic is Trek. So there you go. Go over there and join us. It's a lot of fun. We do it bi-weekly.
All right. Let's get into the Media Corner. I probably should have put that title away too. Media Corner is that one.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV and videos and things?
Over here in the Media Corner.
Whose turn is it?
No, I got it.
Okay, go ahead.
Let's see. So, they just revealed the, or I don't know how it got revealed really, but the original Back to the Future casting list has been revealed. So, in the casting world, when a new role needs to be filled for a major movie, the production may have a general idea of who they want to play a specific role. But that general idea, it could be a list of 20 plus actors.
Wait, isn't it about 35 years too late to tell us what the original cast is?
Well, sometimes these lists don't make the public. So, for it to get unearthed is probably not unusual. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of casting lists that we never have seen. But famously, Eric Stoltz was playing the part of Marty, and they ended up recasting him during the movie.
Yes.
And start it over. But this is not just for Marty. This is roles for the role of scientist. That's what it says on the paper. So nowadays when production asks casting for a role, they reference characters from other movies to give the casting an idea of what sort of character they're looking for. For example, when casting Owen Grady for Jurassic Park, a comparison on the list would be a Harrison Ford of Indiana Jones. The idea is to give a general aura of the character in case, in this case, an attractive leading man with a sense of adventure.
Oh, man. I'm looking over this list trying to imagine some of the scenes with these people.
Let's get down the list.
Go to the crossed off ones first.
Yeah, let me open this up and there you go. So now a couple of them, I could probably stretch my imagination and see something work, but it's hard to imagine a replacement for Christopher Lloyd right now at this point. But anyway, go ahead. I'll let you read a couple.
John Lithgow?
It's
Lord Farquaad in a DMZ.
Yeah. Joe Piscopo? No.
You go through the time portal and they screw you at the time portal.
Yeah, that's right.
Jeff Goldblum. What we got to know is we got to get up to 88 miles an hour, Marty. 88. That's the magic number, Marty. 88.
I could see him. He'd be much more subdued than Christopher Lloyd was. Donald Sutherland?
No.
Dabney Coleman? I love Dabney Coleman, but no. Richard Mulligan? I'm not sure who that is. Should I know who that is?
John Hurd. Wow. That would have been like over the top. Robin Williams, that would have been over the top.
Yeah, I've been way over the top. John Cleese.
Wow.
No, maybe. I don't know. Let's see.
Who else is in here? Mickey Rourke. Gene Hackman. Gene Hackman as Doc Brown.
How about Mickey Rourke?
Alan Arkin. Chevy Chase.
I love Alan Arkin, but no.
Steve Martin. I could almost see Steve Martin in this role.
Maybe
James Woods. He would have been. Look, Rene Auberjonois.
Rene Auberjonois is at the bottom of the list.
What?
Yeah. So there's Charles Grodin, who just passed away. Gene Wilder.
Oh, I couldn't see all the way to the bottom. Hang on.
Yeah, I had to make. I had to
go to Twitter and open it up. Yeah, yeah. Rene Auberjonois.
Harold Ramis.
Yeah.
Chevy Chase. Let's see. I'm looking through James Woods.
Danny DeVito.
He
couldn't see over the steering wheel. Sorry.
No, Eddie Murphy. It's like they just
John
wrote down everybody
Candy.
That was
Henry Winkler. Henry Winkler as Doc Brown. Bill Cosby. Oh, that would have put a whole different flavor on it.
Here's one where I could almost see it is Randy Quaid. Back in the day, Randy Quaid. I think he could have probably pulled it off. Michael Keaton.
This is a long list. You don't realize how many people they actually consider for this.
Yeah. It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
And you know, if this had been somebody else and you were looking at this going, Christopher Lloyd? I don't know.
Yeah. Actually, to be honest with you, it's really hard to imagine somebody other than Christopher Lloyd in the part. I mean, it's him, you know, really. But yeah, there's a couple, like I said, Randy Quaid, I could almost see pulling something because he was, you don't think so?
Yeah, I don't know.
Again, Bill Cosby.
What we need is to get it up to 88 miles an hour, and then we'll get some jello pudding.
What, Doc? I don't know about that. Actually, you know what? All right, look, you know, you look at somebody like Bill Cosby, and they've kind of recycled Back to the Future over the years, you know, and every once in a while you see stories about the 25th anniversary, the 35th anniversary, and, you know, and all the cast gets together and they do stuff. I could not see Bill Cosby coming out at a reunion. Not now.
No. No.
Randy Quaid can't come back in America, I don't think. So
Kevin Spacey ain't coming by anytime soon either.
No.
All right. That takes us to the end. Wow. Thank you. That was a wonderful list. Trying to imagine those other actors doing that. And where would they be today? Question of the week before we let you go. Which video game have you accumulated the most hours in? Oh, yikes.
Wow. I'm trying to think of probably Quake. John Miller Jr. was there for some, for a lot of that. Quake and Quake 2.
A lot of shoot 'em ups for Craig.
Yeah.
See, and he turned frustration out, right.
out. What about you? Oh, Tron, of course. Tron, the arcade game.
Yeah, I mean, there were a lot of arcade games, but I played a lot of the games at home or in school a lot more than that because they were free.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I played a lot of Tron. I played a lot of Battlezone. I played a lot of Missile Command. But it was the stuff at home. I never really owned a modern game console.
I had an Xbox, the original Xbox, for a while. That was fun.
I played a lot of original Wolfenstein on the old Apple II. I played a lot of Wolfenstein 3D on the PCs when they came out in the early 90s. But I think I'd have to say the most played video game was actually Magic Piano on the iPad.
Okay.
I played that pretty solidly for like four years.
It's playing a song and you got to match
it's kind of like the Guitar Hero thing where the dots are coming down and you got to hit the keys.
That's right.
Yeah. Or you hit the dots as they're coming down and you could put it on beginner and advanced and you could earn points. There was gamification. You could earn credits to get new songs. But then they changed up the whole point system and purchasing and in-game purchases. And I was like, hey, wait a minute. I used to have a library full of songs I could play and now I don't. So I gave it up.
I wonder how many Candy Crush comments we're going to get.
Could be. If that's your jam, let us know what
the video
game.
John Miller Jr. said he got good at Quake 3 Arena, which, yeah, so I did play that one as well. I think I'm trying to remember when we used to play that together, me and John, and lots of people. Well, in our when this is back in my ISP days when I had my own ISP.
So Craig, it's okay, Craig, if you're getting old and forgetful. It happens to all of us.
Boy, tonight I swear I was just walking around in circles going, where'd I put this? Oh, I put it over here. Wait a minute, where'd I put that? Oh, it's over here. It's been one of those days.
Better get better at it because we're getting back to normality. And speaking of normality, we want you to give us a call on the listener line, 707-530-2428. Also, send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com. If you can't find any of that information or you can't remember it, you go over to chuckchat.com. You click on the icon that says Technorama, and you will find everything there. How to subscribe to the podcast, where to find us on YouTube, how to call us on the listener line. It's all there. 707-530-2428. Call us on the listener line. We'd love to hear from you. We haven't heard from a number of you people in a long time. We know you're still out there because you haven't gotten out of the house and now you're starting to. So,
yeah, the sun's burning and you're starting to get some fresh air.
Thank you for all the help in putting the show notes and everything else together and the post-production, Craig.
All right.
We're going to record.
You ready? Oh, yeah, you're welcome.
We're going to record our Patreon show right after this. So off to you, patrons. In the meantime, tell a friend about Technorama and Craig's going to give you the binary high five.
All right, 101. Thanks, everybody. Thank you for listening.